Hey everybody, this is Ray Carcillo, and I have the distinct pleasure now of talking with a man who has hundreds of screen credits over the course of his career. I mean, literally, the list is the length of my arm, folks. But for all of us comic book and maybe video game geeks out there, we may know him better for his countless voiceover credits, including Darkseid from the Superman cartoon, and of course, a little guy who that you might not have heard of, I don't know, Sam Fisher from Splinter Cell? I don't know, is that pretty popular? Yeah, I think so. I have the distinct pleasure now of talking with Michael Ironside. Michael, how you doing today?
I'm doing real good. It's a little cold and wet in Los Angeles at the moment.
Well, it's not much. It's not much better here in New York. So we're sharing a little bit of the weather parallels, I guess. But right now you're working on a web series called The Bannon Way. It's on Crackle.com. It's from Sony Pictures. But the first question I got to ask you about is why do a web series? Somebody with your a great list of credits, why would you decide to do like a web series like this?
I don't think the end product really kind of figures into it for me. It's the writing. When I was introduced to this property, I just found the writing to be exceptional. It's very witty, you know, very, very cleverly written, and very solid, definable characters. You know, Jesse Warren, the writer-director, and Mark Gant, a friend of theirs, sent it to me. I looked at it and I thought, wow, you know. And it's kind of rare. I mean, for every 100 scripts I get, there's probably one that hits me like this. And I met with them. They were as pleasant and as talented as their script, and we did it. As far as it being a webisode, how you cook a pie is it's the pie. How you cut it up and deliver it's a different deal. It doesn't really, I think, affect the way something's shot or how it's handled on set. You know.
Very cool. Yeah. No, definitely. But I mean, you're starting to see a lot of like web series really start to gain some traction in online and in the media, and obviously at the forefront of this new media surge. Do you think that's the future? Do you think that television and radio and these other more traditional mediums are going to see this cut into their viewership when you're producing such a high quality like The Bannon Way?
I think, you know, I've been around long enough to watch this happen. I watch television and movies sort of fight it out and find a balance between themselves. And I think it's the nature of our times and money that you just can't sort of make a pilot or shoot something, and if it doesn't work, throw it away. It has to have more than one life to it. And for example, this project, The Bannon Way, as far as I know, it starts as a webisode, then it'll go to a DVD or an MOW, Movie of the Week sort of format, and then it's also, you know, for a DVD release, and then it's also being used as a pilot for a network series. For a project to be, I think, financially responsible and fiscally responsible, it has to have more than one revenue kind of scheme, and, you know, I hope these guys do well with it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you mentioned Mark Gant, of course, who he's actually not only one of the writers, but he's actually also the star. He's playing Neil Bannon. Yeah, your son. And I was going to say, talk a little about your character. Your son's a con artist, but you're the chief of police. How does that dynamic work a little bit? And talk about your character a little.
Mark's a very empirical guy. He's very, very clever, very, very likable guy. His character is a kind of a flash about town con man who likes women and cars and gambling. And I play his father, who's a kind of a Stone Age chief of police. And my brother, which is played by Robert Forrest, is the local mafia kingpin or kind of crime boss, and we're kind of the yin and yang of Mark Gant's life. And it's the story basically revolves around him owing his uncle $150,000 on a gambling debt, and how he's trying to contort and run around town to get that money, and at the same time I'm trying to get him to turn evidence on his uncle, my brother, so I can put him away. And it's a very clever story, very enjoyable.
Now, you always seem to play these kind of like, you know, you said a Stone Age police chief, but you always seem to play like a general or somebody in a high position of authority. Why do you think you get, do you almost get like typecast sometimes into that? Or you kind of try and, how hard is it sometimes to branch out away from that?
Well, I don't think it's difficult if you're willing to do different things at different economic levels. I mean, most people don't know the mainstream stuff I've done, like from Top Gun and Total Recall, Starship Troopers, Free Willy, T4, 4, those sort of things. But for every large film, I get to do about 4 or 5 small ones that are of my choice, you know. And like last year, I did something called the Jazz Man, where I'm playing a saxophone player who's dying of cancer. It was basically loosely based on Mo Kaufman's life. I get that opportunity based upon the fact that I can affect distribution from doing larger pictures. I've been around a long time. I'm never going to be the Gregory Dancer lead actor guy, you know. I'm real happy and real fortunate to keep working, you know. It's what I do. It's like the circus. I ran away and joined it a long time ago.
Nice. Very cool. As long as you're happy, that's all that matters, right?
Yeah, I'm paying the bills. That's what matters.
Yeah. I mentioned Dark Side before from the Superman cartoons and Justice League cartoons, and you were also in a couple episodes of Smallville. Are you a closet comic book geek or a big Superman fan? I was just curious.
No, growing up, yeah, I did. I was enamored with Superman because I thought, being a Canadian and from Toronto, that the original series was based around Toronto. I remember as a kid being told that the Daily Planet was the star newspaper, and that the whole idea was based around that kind of small cosmopolitan city. So that kind of caught my attention. I don't know. I just like trying things. You know, the voice work with cartoons and stuff like that has worked. I'm not interested in doing so much for commercials and stuff, but it's kind of fun to get in a room with a bunch of other actors and have the freedom of not being watched, so you can sort of like take risks. My character, like Darkseid, or the Sam Fisher character in those Splinter Cell things, it's fun to work. Well, it is. It's fun to work. It's not just sort of hit your mark, take your money, and go home. You know, it's fun. It's creative. It's challenging. You get to meet great people. I don't know.
No, that's great. That's great. You get, not a lot of people out there get to love what they do, and you seem to really have enjoy it, and that's a great thing in life.
Yeah, my dad referred to it that I ran away at a very early age and joined the circus, and I think it's quite apt. You know, it's a great way to live. Actually, you move from family unit to family unit, from set to set, from project to project, where you're thrust into a very intimate, very honest relationship with people, and you have to, sort of either tell the truth and step up, or, you know, it can be a horrific situation if you try and manipulate it every time. And over 40 years, I've met a lot of great people.
Is it hard then, if you describe it as like a family unit, is it hard then when the project wraps up and you have to kind of move on to the next project? Is it kind of like a sad moment there?
Yeah, absolutely. But they refer to it as like postpartum. I've got to the point over the years where I actually get it before the film's over. I start getting a little bit of melancholy last few days of a project when I look at people. But, you know, you get to see those people again, but not in that family unit or in that kind of configuration. But, no, man, it's a great way to live.
Of course, you mentioned Sam Fisher, and I made the joke earlier about that, but it's one of the most successful and beloved shooters of all time, and you really breathe a unique life into that character. Did you ever get into video games? Are you a gamer yourself? Do you have an Xbox 360, a PS3? Do you ever pick up a controller after the game is finished?
Yeah, my daughters and that, they have, like, video games. I'm not a gamer. I don't really... I don't know how to put it. I don't physically translate to that way of doing things. I'd rather go out and do it myself, you know. But I don't mean kill somebody.
Like, strap on the night vision goggles and crawl in the shadows. And
No, it's like, you know, people play online golf and stuff, not to take a shot at the game. I'd rather be out there doing it. Splinter Cell was interesting. I actually passed after the fourth game. I didn't think we could take it any farther, and I wasn't really interested. And they came back to me with a fresh look at the character and a way of doing things and the new artwork, and we just finished the fifth one. It'll be out, I think, in about 2 months.
Yes, and actually, Ubisoft just announced that it got pushed back from a late February release to a late April release.
You know, and I think that's to their credit. They were actually going to... There was parts of that company that were going to try and force it through for Christmas. They opted for quality rather than quantity, and I think that speaks for Ubisoft, that to give up a huge payday, like a rushed payday on an old title or something like that, and force it through at Christmas, they took And I'm not kissing their ass here. I just, really, it's rare that you find something in a corporate level that makes organically sound decisions, you know, and they did that. And so, and they pushed it again to make sure they get it right. And, yeah, I was supposed to go out and do the release and stuff like that, I think, at the end of the month, and they just, I just got the call the other day that they're going to push it a month and a half, which is cool. They get it right.
Yeah, no, definitely. As a gamer, we would rather you take the extra month and a half and get it right, especially, like I said, for such a, beloved series.
Yeah, there's a lot of money involved here. People put a lot of money on these games, you know? It's like, you know, I remember I was on a plane somewhere, and somebody stepped up and said, Sam Fisher, I ordered some bloody drink or something, and I got talking to them, and they were talking about how it keeps them as a family unit, these online games, where they sit and play with family members at different places in the world and stuff like that, or have conversations with people in different places of the world. And you know, I never thought that a game, an internet game, would be the kind of meeting place for and place where people can exchange ideas and real truths about each other and stuff like that. So it's kind of a strange world when you can trust a, you know, a game format or platform more than you get in network news and stuff, you know.
Yeah, no, it's insane how far games have come along in the past couple of decades. Would you say Sam Fisher is the character you're most recognized for or most approached about?
Not really. I think it goes generationally. I've been around a long time. If people walk up and say, you know, Jester's dead, I know it's from Top Gun, and they're probably in their 30s to 40s.
Mm-hmm.
If they walk up and say something like, I hate that whale, they're probably in their late 20s and stuff like that from, you know, Free Willy.
Mm-hmm.
And or see you at the party, Richter, or something like that. You know, it depends on where they saw themselves. It seems like about every 6 or 7 years, I hit a huge box office film. And people get to sort of like regurgitate my, you know, specific lines from the films. Sam Fisher, I'm totally anonymous until I open my bloody mouth and people recognize his voice. You know.
That's very cool. Do you ever get to chill with, like, Tom Clancy, or do you ever get to, like, say, hey, Tom, maybe Sam would do this in this situation? Do you ever, since the character is really, it's you, do you ever get a chance to maybe influence what he does a little bit, or go to Tom Clancy and be like, I think you should do this?
No, what I did do is I turned it down at the beginning. I wasn't interested in doing it because it was, structurally, the way the character was built and stuff like that, I just thought, no, I don't want to do this. And they said, what's wrong? And I said, well, it's, you know, he's too monochromatic. There's not enough humanity in the character. There's no conflict underneath his decisions. It was interesting when we first did the first game, the very first game. I actually did it in Montreal at the Ubisoft Labs. I had them bring in other actors because these things are usually done singular, evidently, where you do one actor at a time. It was my first big game. And so I had to hire some actors so I'd have somebody to work with as we worked the character up in the dialogue. And it really worked. Because it's the nature of communication that if you want to play tennis or play a game with somebody and talk and have a conversation, you need them there. Otherwise, it's just sort of like masturbation. And I'm not a big fan of that. So it has its place, believe me.
Of course. I'm not gonna go into any further detail. But you've had such a long career, as you had mentioned, and you've been around for so long. You did a series in the 80s called V, and of course they've kind of come back with that. They've kind of done another iteration of it that's something loosely based on that series. Do you ever think you might be want to have a chance to get back into that series, maybe come in as a guest cameo or something, trying to link the two?
There was that talk, but I really wasn't interested. The original character of Ham Tyler that we built in the mid-80s for that original format, that original show, he kind of like, to revisit that would be kind of like do that whole show and that whole character, I think, a disservice. It's really a different animal. They have, you know, computer-generated graphics. Now, we were using puppets and everything in those days. We were sort of making it up as we go, you know, to the best of our ability. And no, I think Ham Tyler, that character, should... They sent him to Chicago, I think, in the original series. That's where I wanted to go. I got out of the show so I could go do Top Gun and the Richard Pryor film. And no, I don't think I'd want to go back and do it. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like going back. It's like going back and driving an old car. You know, it had its place in time. You know, it's like going back. I had a '55 Chevy that I had for a lot of years. You know, and cool car and stuff like that. But if I had to use it every day, you know, it has its time and place.
No, I hear you. I hear you completely. That's a very good analogy, and it's good stuff. Aside from the Bantam Way, which of course is on Crackle.com right now from Sony Pictures, and of course the Splinter Cell Conviction, which is coming out in April from Ubisoft. What else can we see from you in the future?
That film I did last year. There's a film called The Jazz Man.
Mm-hmm.
Based on Mo Coffman's life, the horn player who died of cancer. It was written by his grandson. I think it's coming out or is out now or will be out soon. I don't really follow the things. thing I did in Romania called Eva, which is a historical piece.
All right, cool. Thank you very much, Michael. Of course, the web series is The Bantam Way, which is available now right on Crackle.com from Sony Pictures. The video game is Splinter Cell Conviction, which will be out for Xbox 360 and the PC later in April. And, of course, the man is Michael Ironside. Michael, thank you very much for your time.